Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Absolutely.
So, to start things off today, I want you to think about your last trip to the dentist.
Oh, yeah. Always a fun time.
Right. You're sitting in that chair, staring up at those incredibly bright ceiling lights, and the hygienist is using that little metal hook to scrape the plaque off your teeth.
Yeah, that scraping sound is just, it's unforgettable.
Exactly. It's annoying, it's, you know, a little uncomfortable, and you probably just want to rinse it down the sink and completely forget about it.
Right.
But what if that annoying dental plaque could actually survive for 146,000 years and completely rewrite human history?
It sounds like sci-fi, honestly.
It really does. But see, we have this ghost lineage of human evolution. It's this ancient population of hominins that we know almost entirely from loose DNA, you know, a few scattered teeth, maybe some bone fragments sitting in caves.
Yeah, we have their genetic code, but we have absolutely no idea what they look like.
Right. And then over in China, scientists have this beautifully preserved, massive ancient skull. But they couldn't genetically identify it because the DNA inside the bone was just completely destroyed by time.
Gone. Completely degraded.
So what really happens when we stop looking at the bones and start looking at the dirt stuck in their teeth?
Well, you essentially open up this entirely new vault of ancient genetic data, and you finally connect the physical fossils to the genetic ghosts.
Which is exactly what we are digging into today. Today we celebrate the work of Kamei Fu, Cheng Ji, and their international team spanning the Chinese Academy of Sciences and the Max Planck Institute, who have advanced our understanding of Middle Pleistocene hominins and Denisovan genetics.
Yeah, their work is just incredible.
It really is. So for this deep dive, we're looking at the paper they published in Cell in 2025, which is titled Denisovan Mitochondrial DNA from Dental Calculus of the Greater Than 146,000-Year-Old Harbin Cranium.
Quite a mouthful, but to understand exactly why this research is so critical, we really need to set the historical stage.
Okay, lay it out for us.
So we are looking at China during the Middle Pleistocene. This is a massive window of evolutionary time, stretching from about 78,000 to 300,000 years ago.
That's a huge span.
It is. And China has over 20 distinct archaeological sites from this era, yielding this highly diverse collection of hominin fossils.
Right.
And the physical shapes of these fossils, their morphology, right? It shows an incredible amount of variety.
So we have all these Chinese fossils, but up until now, zero genetic material to link them to anything known.
Exactly.
And to understand why that's so frustrating for scientists, we kind of have to look at the exact opposite problem happening over in Siberia with the Denisovans.
Yeah, the Denisovan dilemma. So the Denisovans are a sister group to Neanderthals. They shared a common ancestor around 400,000 years ago.
Okay.
And we know they coexisted and even interbred with modern humans.
Yeah.
But our physical evidence of them is just, it's incredibly sparse.
Like almost non-existent.
Basically, right? Yeah. We literally only discovered them because of their DNA, which was extracted from a tiny, highly fragmented pinky bone in the Denisova cave in Siberia.
Wow. Just a pinky bone.
Right. And then later, we found a jawbone in the Baishia cave on the Tibetan plateau.
Okay, let's unpack this. We have their DNA, but we literally don't know what they look like.
We don't.
Because obviously, you cannot reconstruct a human face from a sequence of code and a tiny fragment of a finger. It's like we have an incredibly detailed genetic fingerprint from Siberia, but no face to match it to. And down in Harbin, we have a perfectly preserved face, but no fingerprint.
Exactly. That is the central problem of paleoanthropology in Asia right now.
Right.
And the Harbin cranium is really the star of this deep dive. It is a nearly complete hominin skull found in northeastern China, and it dates back to at least 146,000 years ago.
And it's huge, right?
Oh, it's incredibly robust, massive, and structurally unique. It was so distinct that some researchers actually proposed it belonged to an entirely new species.
Homo longi.
Exactly, Homo longi.
But, you know, if they already knew the DNA from Harbin's bones was completely destroyed, why keep trying to sequence it? I mean, a physical shape is just a physical shape.
Right.
Without DNA, you can debate brow ridges and cheekbones all day, but you can't definitively place the individual on the human family tree.
Yeah, and the researchers certainly tried the traditional methods first. The gold standard for recovering ancient DNA is usually the Petrus bone.
Which is the one near the ear.
Yeah, the extremely dense bone, right around the inner ear. Or they tried the deep roots of the teeth.
Okay.
But when the team tested a tooth in the Petrus bone of this Harbin cranium, the DNA was just gone. It was degraded beyond use.
Because it's been sitting around for 146,000 years.
Exactly. So they had to find a biological time capsule hidden in plain sight. They pivoted to dental calculus, which is essentially a calcified plaque.
Which honestly sounds totally counterintuitive. If the incredibly dense bone of the inner ear completely failed to preserve the DNA, why would hardened spit fare any better?
Well, it comes down to the microscopic biology of these materials.
Yeah.
Bone, even really dense bone, is essentially a living sponge.
Okay.
It is highly porous, so over tens of thousands of years, water seeps in, microbes invade, and the genetic material is systematically broken down or flushed out.
Right, the environment just gets inside.
Exactly. But dental calculus is a completely different structure. When dental plaque isn't brushed away, it mineralizes.
Gross, but fascinating.
Yeah, it turns into a dense crystalline lattice.
Mm.
This crystal structure isn't porous like bone. It actually acts as a microscopic vault.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it becomes entombed outside the body's normal decaying processes, trapping bacteria, food particles, and crucially, the host's own DNA inside a highly stable mineral matrix.
Okay, so the calculus is a crystalline vault. I get that. But getting that ancient DNA out of the vault is not a simple process.
Not at all.
Reading the methodology, the scientists took this precious 146,000-year-old piece of calculus and they hit it with UV irradiation. And then they washed it in a 5% bleach solution. Wait, if you bleach the sample, aren't you risking destroying the exact 146,000-year-old DNA you're desperately looking for? How do you separate the ancient DNA from the DNA of the modern researchers handling it?
This raises an important question, and it is honestly the absolute highest hurdle in ancient DNA sequencing.
I can imagine.
Yeah, because the biggest enemy of an ancient genome is a modern human. Since this skull was discovered, it has been handled, breathed on, moved around.
Right, it's covered in us.
Exactly, it is covered in fresh modern DNA. If you just grind up the calculus and sequence it, you're basically just going to get the genetic code of an archaeologist.
Yeah.
So the UV and bleach are a decontamination process specifically designed for the surface.
Ah, so the UV and bleach don't go all the way through.
Yeah, correct. The UV irradiation acts like a pair of molecular scissors. When you expose modern DNA on the surface of the calculus to intense UV light, it causes the DNA strands to aggressively cross-link and shatter.
Destroying their readability.
Precisely. Then, the 5% bleach wash chemically strips the destroyed modern DNA away. And because the calculus is so dense and crystalline, the bleach and the UV light cannot penetrate the core.
So the ancient DNA trapped deep inside remains locked away safely.
Exactly, while the surface is sterilized.
Okay, that makes biological sense.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at the paper, the contamination inside the calculus was still massive. Even after the surface treatment, they found that between 56% and 67% of the human DNA sequenced from the calculus was still modern human contamination.
Yeah, it's wild.
So the modern world had still managed to seep in. How do you find the ghost lineage in all that modern noise?
You have to look for the specific scars left by time. DNA is a fragile molecule, and over thousands of years, it naturally degrades through a process called cytosine deamination.
Cytosine deamination.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So in the DNA code, you have four bases, A, C, T, and G. Over tens of thousands of years, the cytosine, the C, spontaneously loses an amino group.
Okay.
And it degrades into a uracil. So when sequencing machines read this ancient damaged DNA, they interpret that uracil as a thymina T.
Wait, so the fact that the DNA is severely damaged is actually what proves it's real. The C turns into a T.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And importantly, this specific degradation happens primarily at the frayed broken ends of the DNA fragments.
Oh, I see.
Modern contamination consists of long, healthy, intact strands of DNA. But the ancient DNA is shattered into tiny pieces, and the ends of those pieces show this exact C to T mutation.
That is incredible. It's almost like carbon dating. but you don't need a separate chemical test. The timeline is built right into the genetic code itself.
That is an excellent way to think about it. So the researchers created a strict molecular filter. They threw out the long strands.
Because those are modern.
Right. And they only looked at fragments under 60 base pairs in length that exhibited the specific C-T damage at their ends. That allowed them to isolate the authentic ancient DNA.
Wow.
And to be absolutely certain that they weren't introducing any biases, they didn't map this ancient DNA against a modern human reference genome. They actually mapped it against a mathematically reconstructed ancestral hominin template.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Once they apply this filter and strip away the modern noise, what exactly do they find?
The results were completely definitive. The Harbin mitochondrial DNA falls perfectly within the known genetic variation of Denisovans.
Boom. The fingerprint finally matches the face.
Yes, it finally matches.
But the data goes even deeper than just slapping a broad Denisovan label on the skull. They looked at the specific timeline. Because we know from the fossils in Siberia that Denisovans lived over a huge span of time, right?
They did.
They're broadly categorized into older early Denisovans and much younger late Denisovans.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The early Denisovans date roughly from 123,000 to 217,000 years ago, while the late Denisovans live between 52,000 and 84,000 years ago.
Okay.
And the Harbin DNA specifically clusters with the early Denisovans. It aligns perfectly with older Siberian fossils.
Right, like Denisova 2, 8, 19, 20, and 21. But how can they be so sure of that specific clustering from just tiny shattered fragments of plaque DNA?
Well, it comes down to precision at the single nucleotide level. The team analyzed six specific genetic positions where the evolutionary family tree branches.
Okay.
They found that at these positions, the older early Denisovans had derived or mutated variants of the gene, while the younger late Denisovans actually carried the original ancestral variants.
Wait, hold on. How can the younger group have the older ancestral genes? That sounds backward.
It does sound backward until you look at how populations branch apart. Think of it like a tree. The early Denisovans we found were part of a specific branch that mutated new traits, but the late Denisovans did not descend directly from them. The younger Denisovans likely branched off from a completely different, older lineage that had been isolated elsewhere.
Oh, I see. So because they were isolated, they simply retained those original traits.
Exactly. Let's look at one specific example from the paper position 16,111 in the mitochondrial genome.
Okay.
At this exact spot, the Harbin sequence carried the derived variant, matching the older early Denisovan branch perfectly.
So we aren't just looking at the broad shape of the genome.
No.
We are pointing to exact base pairs, like position 16,111, to definitively prove this skull belongs to the early Denisovan family tree.
Exactly. For the very first time, Denisovan mitochondrial DNA is directly connected to a nearly complete hominin cranium.
The ghost lineage finally has a physical form. That is huge. So what does this all mean for you and the history of human evolution?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it fundamentally changes our map of the ancient world. Before the study, the definitive molecular evidence for Denisovans was highly localized. We had a cave in Siberia, a jawbone on the Tibetan plateau.
Just scattered whispers.
Right, but finding a definitively Denisovan skull in Harbin proves that Denisovans inhabited a massive geographical range across Asia during the Middle Pleistocene.
They weren't just an isolated group.
Exactly, they were a widespread, highly successful population.
And it triggers this incredible ripple effect through the entire field. Because now we finally know what Denisovan morphological traits actually look like.
Yes, we know the shape of their brow, the immense width of their face, and that serves as an anchor point. Remember those 20-plus Middle Pleistocene sites in China filled with mysterious fossils?
Like the ones from Dali, Jinushian, and Wollongong, the ones with no surviving DNA.
Right. Many of those DNA-less fossils exhibit physical traits that are strikingly similar to the Harbin cranium.
Oh, wow.
So now, using Harbin as the genetic calibration weight, researchers can look at those mysterious fossils and say, based on these specific cranial shapes matching the Harbin skull, these are likely Denisovans too.
That is going to unlock museum drawers all over Asia.
It really is.
But, you know, we should be clear about what this study doesn't tell us. There are limitations here, right?
Yes, definitely. The DNA recovered from the dental calculus is mitochondrial DNA, or mtDNA.
Which is only passed down through the maternal line.
Right. It is a single unbroken chain of mothers. It doesn't give us the full picture of the father's side or any complex interbreeding that might have happened.
Because to get the full picture, you need nuclear DNA.
Exactly. And getting full nuclear DNA out of a 146,000-year-old plaque is an exponentially harder challenge.
Sure, but still, the next step is pretty clear. Dental calculus is now proven as a highly viable, game-changing source for ancient DNA when bones fail.
It completely reframes how excavators will treat these fossils moving forward.
So just to wrap things up here, by successfully extracting mitochondrial DNA from fossilized dental plaque, scientists have finally linked the 146,000-year-old Harbin cranium to the Denisovans.
A massive breakthrough.
Truly. It bridges this huge gap between genetics and physical morphology, giving a face to a ghost lineage and proving they roamed a vast expanse of Asia.
It really leaves us looking at the past through an entirely new lens.
Exactly. So what does this mean for the countless other mysterious hominin fossils sitting in museum drawers around the world just waiting for their plaque to be read?
It's an exciting time for science, that's for sure.
It really is. This episode is based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Trace the thread that won't sit still. Just juif held up to the light, a signal hiding in the fray. Patterns whisper, then they run across the map of shifting forms. If the story's missing chunks, we listen harder through the storm. Motifs in the noise, line by line, a quiet code in a tangled design. Pull the network, feel it move. What looks like static starts to prove. Motifs in the noise come alive. Construe, and what we watch starts watching through. Motifs in the noise.